I'd like to read this morning from Acts chapter 17, beginning at verse 16. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews, both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean." And it goes on to then describe the interaction. And I've read this passage, and we have read this passage before in the life of our church, but I'm doing it today because we're doing a bit of a pause on the do not be conformed to this world topic that we've been looking at the last little while. And I guess I was impressed that it was important for us to have a look at the issue of questions. Just like Paul was in a place of Athens which seemed strange, and what he was talking about was strange to them, and they were asking him questions and he was asking them questions as well, and engaging with them, that's one of the things that we need to do in the society that we live in. And questions is a very big part of it. I looked up on the internet last night, and you know that every single day there are over 8 billion questions asked of Google. Like that's electronically at least one question being asked of Google every day for every person on the planet, many of whom don't actually go on Google every day. But it's just a reflection of the human condition, isn't it? It's what we all do. We all ask questions all of the time. And from when you're a little kid, right? Why? Why, Mummy? Why, Daddy? There's almost anything that goes on in life. A child, as soon as they can begin to say the word or ask the question, why, they will practice it over and over and over again. We all have questions, and some of us are really good at articulating them, and sometimes others of us have nagging questions. And I'm not really quite sure what it is that I'm questioning, but I know there's some sort of question there. And particularly now that we live in a society that is more pluralistic than it was 50 years ago, in that there's a melting pot of cultures and philosophies and religions and all those sorts of things, it's not surprising that a whole lot of questions will arise for us in this time that maybe didn't arise for other people in different times. But we can be confident that when Christianity first emerged into the first century Roman world, it was a pluralist place. There were temples to this and that and the other thing. There were idols left, right and centre. There were competing schools of philosophy. There was Epicureans. There were Stoics. All of these sorts of things. There were esoteric religions. It was a true melting pot. And although it can seem strange to us, maybe in living in a Western culture that is slowly walking away from being dominated by Christian thought, it certainly wasn't something that is new to the whole message of Jesus. When it first emerged, it emerged into precisely that sort of environment. And so today I just want to touch on a few different questions, and we have touched on them before, but I think it's important for us to touch on them regularly, and because they are things that come up in people as they try and wrestle with life and God and all those sorts of things. And they're issues of science and issues of suffering, and if you like, a spectrum of spiritualities and secularism. And there's another S too, and that relates to sex, but we're not going to be talking about sex this morning. But we are going to be hopefully looking at some of the questions that arise in these areas: science, suffering, spectrum of spirituality, and secularism. Because one of the things that you and I will notice is that there is concerted push to remove religion from public spaces. And that's been happening over the last few decades. And often it's driven by people who are secularist, who say, we don't want to offend people of different religious persuasions. It very rarely comes from people actually of different religious persuasions. You very rarely come across Muslims complaining about a celebration of Christmas, for example, or Christians complaining about some other religious festival. But often, I'm not saying exclusively, but often it's secularists that are doing that. They think they need to do that on behalf of other people. Because there's a deep, their deep assumption is that materialism is all there is and religion is like a lifestyle choice. And we don't want to impose it on anybody. But in what they are actually doing is saying, well, actually, secularism is the truth and everything else is a variation from that. And that's the pervasive underlying assumption in much of our society today. And you are probably absorbed by that and influenced by that. But here's a great question, a couple of great questions that I think if you want to be a bit of a deeper thinker that you want to ask and reflect on. When you wake up in the morning, ask yourself this question. Why is there something rather than nothing? Why is there an immense universe of hundreds of billions of galaxies and Earth with hundreds of billions or whatever of ants? Why is there something rather than nothing? And why is it that human beings can comprehend that there is something rather than nothing? Why is it that humans can take measurements and build instruments that can detect black holes billions of light years away colliding together and causing ripples in space-time? Why is it that humans can construct electron microscopes to look at even individual atoms? Why is it that humans are able to comprehend, at least to some degree, the vastness of this something? And people have been, deep thinkers have been thinking about these questions for millennia. These aren't suddenly new questions. And in fact, all of the sort of religious diversity that exists today existed back in Paul's day when he visited Athens. And the options of atheism through to polytheism and all that sort of stuff were well known and thought about in those days too. But if we have a secular assumption, we ask ourselves, why is there something rather than nothing? And why is it that humans can comprehend that something? And a secularist can just say, well, just because it is. There is no why. It just is. And what that means, that any purpose that you construct for your life is just illusory. I mean, it seems real and it can motivate you and provide shape to your direction to your life, but it's just illusory because if there is no why, there just is, there is no purpose, there is no end. Why is there something? And if you think more diligently through that, you can then recognize that actually this physical world is always, everything in the physical world is contingent. Something always happens as a result of something that preceded it. And I've talked about this before, the dominoes, you know, that you line the dominoes up in a line. This one gets knocked over because the previous one knocks it over. And that one gets knocked over because the previous one to that knocks it over. That's the nature of the physical world that we see around us. But you see, if there is no first domino, then you never get to the 100 millionth domino. And so you have to have an uncaused cause, a non-physical cause, a spiritual cause. And that doesn't matter whether it's in this universe or in a multiverse or whatever, you get back to having something that is uncaused because what we see is causality all around us. And you get to, that must be more. There must be a spiritual reality. And so the secular assumption is actually inadequate. It doesn't adequately describe all of reality. And so now we have to think about, well, what's the nature of that spirituality? And you can, and by analogy and some other thinking, that that spiritual reality must be intelligent and powerful and have ability to choose. But often in a in our culture today, people will say, well, evolution has eliminated the need for that. There's a God of the gaps, and we used to use God to sort of fill in the bits that we didn't understand. And now that we understand that this world and animals and life all developed through the process of evolution, we therefore don't need God anymore. And the bits that we don't quite yet understand, how maybe different bits of anatomy evolved or whatever else, doesn't mean that means that we've explained it all now, and so therefore we don't need God. But that's actually a false way of thinking about things. And you all know that I'm a bit of a tech nerd, right? And so I watched the recent Tesla AI Day, where they had a stream about what they're doing about robotics and building humanoid robots that walk and can do useful things and all that sort of stuff. But the interesting thing about that whole area and the whole area of neural networks and things like that, that there's a thing in computer programming called genetic programming. And what it is that they have a way of doing programming that basically uses the process of evolution to build a better program. What they actually do is that they have programs and then they deliberately introduce mutations into that program and then they run it again and to see which mutations work best. And then they recombine it with other ones and over time they develop better programs. And the reality is that this genetic programming produces better programs. It's a process of producing better programs than you could otherwise produce. So recognizing that the process of evolution develops things doesn't eliminate the need for God. All it does is say this is the process that was used. And maybe as we begin to understand and we try and wrestle with developing artificial intelligence, maybe it's the only sort of process that would actually lead to the sort of life that exists today. Me being able to describe the process of how Chris makes a cup of tea in the morning doesn't eliminate the need for Chris. And understanding a process like evolution doesn't eliminate the need for God. All it does is identify how things are actually working. And as we understand it more deeply, we recognize actually things need to work that way to have the sort of world that we have. And so this expansion of science is not a sort of pushing out God out of the gap sort of thing at all, when rightly understood. And so it is true. Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God. And Romans 1, where Paul says, what can be known about God is evident from the creation. There's evidence for God's existence and some of the characteristics of God for deep thinking people. Whether you lived in the Amazon jungle and have never seen an iPhone, or whether you're the most tech savvy person in the world, these sort of reflections are accessible to you now and ages ago. That there is good reason to believe in the existence of the spiritual world. There is good reason to believe in the existence of God. Science is wonderful and powerful, but it's not a God of the gaps thing. And we could talk much more about that. But hopefully at least some of those things give you some way of beginning to engage with those questions, or helping friends of yours engage with those questions if they're the sort of questions that they are facing. So that's science. What about suffering? And it's maybe a bit more real for people at the moment. We've sort of come out of 2 years of COVID, but we're in the midst of floods. And some people have lost everything, often for the second or third time in a year. And we are well aware of conflicts in places like the Ukraine where, you know, even a few short weeks ago, some poor person in the back blocks of Russia was going about their normal life. Then all of a sudden their life was upended. They were grabbed and conscripted and sent off to fight in a war that they probably didn't know much about or didn't want to be in, and now find themselves being killed and injured. their lives being turned upside down, outside of their control. Just like people were quite happily going about their business and all of a sudden the water levels rose and they couldn't even get home, their lives were turned up outside of their control. Or you go along normally in your life and all of a sudden you get some medical diagnosis and it's outside of your control. Or a relationship that you thought was solid and strong all of a sudden fractures and there's conflict and there's loss and there's heartbreak. That there was turmoil and there was suffering. And some people say that that's a reason for there not to be a God. But you can take an atheist position, and that's right, but that still leaves you with suffering. It doesn't take away the reality of it. And in many ways, lots of religions have attempts to address that issue of suffering. For example, Buddhism, Buddha, he saw suffering, and he said, well, you can try indulgence or you can try asceticism, and neither of those seem to work, and so he developed this sort of whole philosophy of life around a middle path, and about detachment. You know, other main religions like Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism, for example, if you just take by numbers of adherents, they have serious attempts at answering the questions of reality of life. Now, they have different answers, but they are serious attempts. They're serious investigations and reflections on the issue. And we should be, as a Christians, we should be people who pursue truth and are happy to pursue it wherever it goes. And we should be people who are able to acknowledge that, yeah, I agree with that part of what you think. I think that's right. But as we wrestle with suffering, often there's the intellectual trying to explain it. And Christianity would say, well, God's made this world, made it contingent, made free will a choice, and that leads to some difficult things, and God has entered into our world with all of its suffering to redeem it, and one day we'll wipe away every tear from every eye. And sometimes we can't conceive that God could possibly do it so that it would seem like everything is put back better than it was. But then there's the God of 100 billion galaxies who might actually, if our God is big enough, we might actually be able to get to that point. Because Jesus said this, a time is coming, and in fact has now come, this is John chapter 16, when you will be scattered, each to your home, you will leave me all alone, yet I am not alone, for my Father is with me. I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble. You may not have had it yet, you may not have had it recently, but it's coming. It may not be as tense as the person next to you, or it may be more intense than the person next to you, but trouble is a lived reality. And Jesus says, that's true, but this is also true. Take heart, I have overcome the world. When I was at primary school, one of the other children in my class was the daughter of a professional tennis player. I think his name was Ash Cooper. So this was me back in the 70s when he's a professional. And I have this vague recollection, and the story could be wrong, but it may be right to someone else, but there was a story about, I think this guy, Ash Cooper, and he was then diagnosed with a serious illness. And what often people ask when something bad happens to them, they go, why me? And in fact, you might be doing that just at the moment, and you might be saying, why me? But it was interesting that this guy said, well, why not me? People get sick, bad things happen. Why wouldn't it possibly happen to me? And I was talking to Malcolm Potts, who's an Anglican minister from over in Perth. And earlier this year, their granddaughter, young, like 2-year-old granddaughter, was diagnosed with a serious cancer. And your heart would rend and their hearts would rend. And their life's been turned upside down. They're, every few weeks, they're flying across the country to be with their their extended family and helped them with all of the treatment process and all that sort of stuff. And Malcolm was saying, and we're asking the question, well, why not me? And so when we sort of flip that question, it says, well, actually, there is suffering in the world all the time. And just because I haven't currently experienced it till this point, that sometimes comes as a surprise to us. But Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble. It'll be different for different people. James and John, James got martyred very early. John lived into his 90s. It's not like it's the same for everybody. But when we're wrestling with a question of suffering, the Christian answer is that it's real. We shouldn't be surprised if it happens to us. But God is working in and through it and beyond it to a new creation. And the resurrection of Jesus is the sure signpost that that is happening. So we've looked at secularism, we've looked at science, we've looked at suffering. And now we want to look at, briefly as we close, the whole idea, the issue of the spectrum of spiritualities. You know, 30 years ago, the chances of you knowing someone that was a Hindu or a Muslim, unless you were a missionary overseas, that was very low, right? But most of us now would know people that are Muslims or Buddhists or Hindus or Sikhs or whomever. The religious landscape in Australia has utterly transformed. And the question is, how do we interact with and relate to those sort of people? Well, and I said it already before, that religions are answers to the big questions of life. What's ultimate reality? What's the good life? Who's the good person? How do you become the good person? Religions have answers to those things. And so we should take them seriously. And if we should engage with people and try and listen and understand about what they are. It's interesting, actually. When you go back and look at the history of it, it seems that there was a flowering of religious writings in the first millennium BC. So from 1000 BC up to about when it became AD, about 1000 years later. It was during that time that Buddha lived. It's during that time that some of the Vedas were written. It's during that time that profound writings like Psalm 23 or Isaiah were put together. And we can, as Christians, we can listen to and learn from and seek to understand how other religions explain the world and what it's like and who you should be and all those sorts of things. We can recognize where there's areas of commonality, but we can also recognize where there are substantial differences. And sometimes we can say, well, yeah,
might have to switch to this one. For example, Buddhism and others talk about compassion, and we talk about compassion, and so there seems to be some overlaps. But then when you get to sort of deeper and more long-standing things, there's that, like, ultimate questions, you then get to differences. Like, well, in Buddhism, the best thing that can happen to you is that you cease to exist. Because everything, including you, is impermanent. That's the sort of a Buddhist answer to suffering, is its impermanence. Right? And so it's a slightly different answer to the question of suffering that Christians have. Now, they've got a great focus on compassion, and that's great, but there are these other differences. And Tom Wright once talked about it, like you can be on a train, like he's in England, so, and he was saying you can be travelling from somewhere in the north of England to somewhere in the south of England. And if you were going from, I don't know, Sheffield to London, you might actually spend some time on the same train line as if you were going from Glasgow to Birmingham. So you could have compared to someone else, you could have an entirely different origin and an entirely different destination. But for some part of your journey, there's an overlap when you're travelling together. And so as we think about different religions, we can understand it that way, that there may well be some overlap. But when we dig deeper to some of the deeper answers to the bigger questions in different religions, you'll find you're coming from different places and you're going to different places. And that will end up being different in lots of different ways. But we shouldn't be afraid of talking with people and interacting with people and loving people and having them as our friends and neighbours, because all truth is God's truth. And we can affirm things where we agree on. And the question is, how do we get on with people from a different faith tradition? And Peter says in 1 Peter 3:15, which is not 1 Peter 3:16. In fact, there's a whole bunch of verses where it's chapter 3, verse 16, where there are actually useful, interesting things that are said. But in 1 Peter 3:15, it says this. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. Humility, gentleness, respect, seeking for truth are ways that attitudes that we should have when we engage with people from different places. But I want to finish by cycling back to where we started in Acts chapter 17. Because Paul had gone to Athens, this place of philosophy and temples and idols. And he was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. And that's really what we want, the big question that we want people to think about. Not about whether Christianity is right or you should join some particular denomination or some particular church. But we just want people to think about, who is Jesus? In all of the religious things that have gone on, whether it's Jewish or Gentile, whether it's ancient or modern, the question is, there was this person that lived. There was this person who died. And there's this good evidence that this person amazingly was resurrected. And at the centre of Matthew, Mark and Luke, Jesus asked the question, who do you say that I am? And whatever religious background we come from, that's a question that we need to ponder deeply. Who do I think Jesus is? Because that's what Paul basically offered to those in Athens. And some of them concluded, he's the ultimate revelation of God. And the Roman Empire was ultimately transformed by people reflecting on that question, who do they think Jesus was? And so the deep questions we started with, why is there something rather than nothing? Why can I comprehend that something? Need to be paired with another question. Who do I say Jesus is? Let me investigate him with an open mind. Let's find out who he is and what he does. Ask the hard questions, but see if you can come in your mind to some conclusion about who this person is, this person who has undoubtedly changed history. There's no question about that. And maybe we can gently invite other people to reflect on that question with us. Now, there are many more questions, and maybe this is just a start of a conversation, and I'll be happy to have it with you, or you can have it in your small groups or whatever else. We should never be afraid of them. We are almost hardwired to ask questions. And God always affirms us when we do ask those questions. I'm going to invite the team to come back up, and we're going to sing our final song in a moment, but I'm just going to pray. God, for some of us, we don't think about questions very often. Others of us, God, we think about them all the time. Some of us feel and we don't really understand how to answer questions, or others of us want to get down in the nitty-gritty and the details. But I thank you, God, that you are not afraid of questions. And in fact, that you, Jesus, when you were walking on this earth, asked us questions. And Lord, I pray for people here that might be wrestling with particular questions, that some of what we shared today may be helpful for them. And if there's other questions, God, that we would find ways to help them, point them to answers in you, for us and for those around us. Amen.